Well, someone managed it, however it was done.
Indri wrote something else down and looked at it for a long moment, prodding her cheek with her tongue.
I wish you'd called me sooner. We might have ended this here, or at least learned more. Why didn't you use the locket I gave you?
There wasn't time, Tane said. It happened fast, and afterwards the Mage Blades were already here, and the Blue Caps had been called in.
You could have told me what you were doing before you came across the actual murderer, said Indri. And Lady Abena tells me you were in the Citadel while the Senate was in session. You two are drawing too much attention to yourselves. I might be able to keep Chief Durin off you for a while, but if the mask has an interest in you already, this isn't helping.
I know. The thought had occurred to Tane more than once, and he didn't much like it. But we weren't the targets here, as far as I can tell. Katka nodded.
Tries to stab Durnor through the head first, like the others. Even after I attack, only tries again. Hardly notices me at all.
She dipped her head there, and her voice was unusually subdued.
Everything after Karfa took boy away was just defense, covering escape.
But you did save the boy.
Indri gave Tane a look he couldn't read.
I suppose I can't fault your methods too much if they put you in the position to do that. And thanks to your Silver Dawn source, we know to put constables on the old maintenance tunnels, although I don't think half the ways in and out are even on our maps anymore.
We can probably cross Deepweald off the suspect list, too, said Tane. If the mask was here last night, it was probably for reconnaissance, trying to find a way around the increased security in the roost.
At least the patrols were good for something, then.
Indri couldn't keep the frustration from her voice.
Not enough to stop the attempt, but a night off is more than we got between the first two murders.
Tane was about to answer when the outside door opened behind her and he saw the last person he wanted to see.
You two! Chief Durin shouted, jabbing a finger toward Tane and Katka.
His face was bright red.
Every time, right at the scene of the crime!
He tromped across the foyer to stand beside Indri.
Inspector Lovial, I want these two taken. Durin!
Deepweld's voice, from the landing above. He leaned over the rail. Durnor wasn't with him. He'd taken the boy somewhere out of the way while the Blue Caps went over the manor.
These two saved my grandson's life. You aren't taking him anywhere.
The red in Durin's cheeks paled abruptly.
No, Senator Deepweld, I didn't... Of course not, if you vouch for them. I only want to be as thorough as possible in finding whoever attacked young Durnor. When I heard what had happened, I came right away. Perhaps we could talk elsewhere.
Deepweld was descending to the foyer now.
About how this mask is going to be found before he acts again? Yes, I think we damned well should.
At the bottom of the stairs, he turned toward his study and glanced impatiently over his shoulder at Durin.
Well, are you coming? One moment, Your Honor, Durin said. Inspector Lovial, I'm leaving the scene to you.
As if Lady Abena left him a choice.
Don't disappoint me. I expect this to be done right.
And then with a final glare at Tane and Katka, he followed Deepweld down the hall. Katka watched him go with a frown.
How do you stand him? He's not man who should lead anything.
No, but he knows how to play politics with the Senate houses.
Indri sighed.
And he isn't happy that a case this big has been taken out of his hands. He'd have me off it if not for Lady Abena. I'm not sure I'm going to have a career left when this is over.
Tane knew how important her work was to her, and that associating with him hadn't made things any easier. She shook her head.
No time to feel sorry for myself now. We have work to do. Come on, I need to see the scene.
Moving with purpose, she started up the stairs. Durnor's room was still in shambles from the fight. The wall was dented and broken where Katka had struck it twice. Toys were strewn everywhere, and feathers and padding from the twice-stabbed bed drifted across the floor. An elven Blue Cap stood beside the bed, and another, a sprite woman, perched on his shoulder.
Find anything?
Indri asked. The elven man shook his head.
No, Inspector, just like the other scenes. The spike is clean, no astral signature that we can find. Arlene was about to give it another go.
Don't bother,
Indri said. For a brief moment, her eyes went out of focus, and then she shook her head.
Nothing, and I doubt we'll find anything more on the grounds either.
Again, that hint of frustration crept into her voice.
It's like no one was ever here. Nobody should be able to evade so many spells without leaving a trace.
There's one trace, said Tane, his eyes on the crowned staff jabbed through the mattress into the bed frame. And we haven't checked it yet.
Ah, yes, more insane rantings. This should be a treat.
Indri pulled a handkerchief from her pocket to cover her hand, then reached out and twisted the crown around the head of the staff. Just like at the rose petal scene, glyphs flared blue all around the crown, and then the mask was in front of them, staring with glowing blue eye slits through a brass plate engraved with the Mage Emperor's sigil. Only an illusion, but somehow it seemed far more menacing to Tane now that he'd seen it in person.
"You cannot stop me, Mage Breakers." Khadka cocked an eyebrow.
"Not so subtle this time."
But the mask had more to say, and the next words froze Tane's heart in his chest.
"The new age of the magical is nigh. My victims die to herald the Emperor's coming, and there will be more. Bow your heads, or join them."
Chapter 11 The next day found Tane and Khadka back in the Griffin's Roost, this time without a blue cap escort. Walking down the immaculately maintained tree-lined street, Tane felt like his every move was being watched. Like powerful people were staring at him through the curtains of every carriage that rolled past. And there was no shortage of those. The people who lived here didn't walk. They were driven in opulent vehicles, horse-drawn or anchorist-powered, especially with a killer on the loose. The roost was largely empty of foot traffic, save for him and Khadka. And the Mage Blades. Dozens of them patrolled in pairs up and down every street at Lady Abena's order, on watch for any sign of another attack. Didn't do anything to stop the mask getting into the Deepweald Manor, though.
"You see this Uthar woman in Senate?"
Khadka said as they walked.
"Could be her, you think? Ogren killer? Seems strange."
"I wasn't trying to throw Indri off the trail, if that's what you mean," said Tane. "After last night, I'm perfectly happy to let the blue caps deal with the mask." He'd caught Indri up on their investigation the previous evening. They'd arranged to meet this morning at the Uthar Manor. Noanna Uthar was on Endo's list, along with others from her house. Apparently she's been acting strangely the last month, siding with pro-magical partisans where she wouldn't have before. And the person we saw last night? The size points to Ogren.
"So, why attack Deepweald's family? He is on same side in Senate, you said."
"I don't know. Sometimes converts are the most zealous believers. Maybe she thinks all non-magicals who could be named protector of the realm one day need to die. Maybe she's with the Knights of the Emperor and their agenda trumps a Senate vote. Or maybe she's not involved at all and we're looking in the wrong place."
"You still worry about Silver Dawn?"
Khadka said. It wasn't a question.
"What Deepweald said?"
"The man is a bigot, but he wasn't wrong about the possibility. The Silver Dawn is popular with the lower classes. It wouldn't be hard for them to win over a servant or two in some of these manors. And the lack of astral trace at any of the scenes could mean another half-orc is involved. I can't think where we're more likely to find one than among the Silver Dawn." Khadka frowned. She was uncomfortable with the idea, he could tell. Whatever this Iskar fellow she'd met had said to her, it had made a strong impression.
"You already said too big for half-orc," she said. "And Silver Dawn speaks for non-magicals. Why use Mage Emperor symbols? Why kill people with no magic? Why Stuk, if he was ally?"
"The size does hurt the half-orc theory," Tane admitted. "But we also saw the mask use active illusion to disappear like only a gnome can, so I'm not ready to rule anything out. As for the rest of it, we only have the Silver Dawn's word that Ulnod was one of them. And, like Deepweald said, if they wanted to create sympathy for their cause, inventing a pro-magical murderer is a way to do it. Or..."
"Or what? Say it, Carver."
"What if the Knights of the Emperor are pulling the strings? They might have infiltrated the organization." "Spellfire, that sounds crazy." The past few days, Tane saw the hand of the Knights everywhere, no matter how far-fetched. Except, crazy doesn't have to mean wrong. Not when we're dealing with a giant killer in a metal mask who can walk through wards and leave no trace. Khadka shook her head.
"No, makes no sense. Why send us to Deepweald, then? If they are behind the mask, why put us in place to stop him?"
"Because the mask has been playing with us from the start, sending us messages trying to draw us into this. If the Knights of the Emperor are pulling the strings, maybe they sent us there because they wanted us there. Because we beat them once, and they can't let that stand. We've been challenged now, and people are going to hear about it. Every murder we can't stop discredits us a little bit more. Iskar told you that we were becoming a symbol for the cause, but maybe it's a symbol his masters want erased.
He's not like that, Katka said stubbornly. You read people, Carver, but I was there, not you.
They were nearing the Uthar estate now, an opulent, gated manor like so many others on Riverview Avenue, home to the eldest and wealthiest of the Senate houses. Further down at the end of the road, Kane could see the massive Audlian estate, guarded by a veritable army. Dahlia Audlian had certainly meant it when she talked about increasing security.
I know you liked him, Katka, Kane said, but right now...
He's not just because I like him,
Katka said, narrowing her eyes.
Was way he talks, like he believes in better things.
Kane raised his hands. All right, but we can't ignore any possibility right now.
Including Uthar woman. As much points at her as Iskar and Silver Dawn.
Believe me, I haven't forgotten. That's why we're going to talk to her. For all I know, it's her and the Silver Dawn and the entire Senate. Feels like everyone we talk to could be a secret killer. Tane's fingertips found his watch case and traveled over the familiar dents. We need to end this, and the only way I know to make that happen is to follow every lead. Katka cocked her head at him, and the annoyance faded from her eyes.
It's not our fault, just because Maesk uses our name, Carver. It's not your fault. You know this, yes?
I know, he said, but that doesn't make me feel any better about it. As they reached the Uthar estate, a blue coach bearing the emblem of the constabulary, a golden shield emblazoned with a rearing griffin, drew up outside the gate, and Indri climbed out. She was dressed in plain clothes rather than her uniform, presumably to spare the family embarrassment. Not a courtesy the Blue Caps ever offered in the poorer districts. Indri raised a hand in greeting.
Tane, Katka, good timing. Come on.
The guards gave them no trouble at the gate. They were expected. A towering Ogryn footman led them across the grounds, not to the manor entrance, but around the side of the house toward the rear gardens.
Remember, you're just here to observe, Indri said, glancing pointedly at Tane. Senator Uthar is speaking to us as a courtesy. I asked you here because you're good at seeing lies, and I can't start casting truth spells on senators without stronger evidence than we have. But I don't want you to say anything. Either of you.
Understood, said Tane. I won't say a word. Unless I have to. He trusted Indri to ask the right questions, but it wasn't her the mask kept leaving messages for on top of dead bodies. Around the back of the manor, the grounds opened up into a vast, well-maintained garden, divided into sections by manicured hedges. At the far end, the ground sloped down toward the Aude River, and a high wall separated the estate from the bank. In a gazebo at the garden's center, Noanna Uthar reclined in a huge chair with an open book in her hand. The footman led them to her, and she looked up as they approached. The footman bowed and introduced them.
Constable Inspector Indri Lovial and Company, Your Honor.
Senator Uthar remained in her chair. Even sitting, only Katka matched her height, and her perfect features broke into a gentle smile.
Welcome, all of you.
She was impossibly lovely, like all Ogryn, near 9 feet tall, with golden hair and cheekbones that could have been carved from marble. Dane felt himself flush as she turned her eyes to him.
And I can only presume these are the ones they call mage-breakers. How interesting. What have you come to ask me about, Inspector Lovial?
I'm very sorry I have to do this, Senator, but I need to ask where you were when the mask was seen at Deepweld Manor last night, as well as the nights of the murders.
Indri handed a slip of paper to Senator Uthar.
We'll need to talk to these others, too.
Uthar looked over the list with solemn gravity.
My husband and my nephew.
Her nephew Aegon was the junior senator and heir to the house. Noanna and Odin Uthar had no children of their own. The great curse of the Ogryn was that they rarely carried to term, and when they did, 1 in 3 were born mindless, brutish ogres who had to be sequestered in a remote sanctuary at the south end of the isle.
Everyone in House Uthar with standing invitations to all 3 crime scenes. Are we being accused of something?
Her voice didn't fluctuate in the slightest, but Tane could have sworn he saw her eyes flick over Indri's shoulder toward the manor house. What is she looking at? It was hard to follow her eyeline accurately given their difference in height, and there wasn't much there. Some windows, another covered patio, a cellar door set into the foundation.
Not at all, Your Honor, Indri said. Again, I'm sorry, but we do need to be thorough, Every name we check off the list narrows it down. If you can all account for your movements, we'll be on our way.
We were here, of course. Odin and Aegon are brunching with guests in town, but I can tell you that we were together all three nights. The incidents were all late in the evening, weren't they? We would have been settled in the lounge by then.
Again, the senator's eyes moved, just for an instant, and she covered it well. But Tane was certain now. She was looking at the cellar door, and she was nervous for some reason. What does she have in there?
We'll need to verify that with your staff, Indri said. Do you mind if we speak to them now?
For the briefest moment, Noanna Uthar's perfect facade faltered.
Right now,
She regained her composure almost instantly.
Now isn't a good time. We're renovating a number of rooms in the house, but I know just who you'll need to talk to. What if I send them to Stookton Yard?
Tane caught Indri's eye and raised a brow. She nodded. She'd noticed it, too.
That is very generous, Your Honor, Indri said. But I had hoped to have a look around the house and grounds as well, just to be thorough, of course.
I don't think that will be necessary, Inspector,
Senator Uthar said firmly.
I'm sure Chief Constable Durin would agree. I will send the appropriate staff to the yard. Now, please, excuse me.
She hefted her book and smiled again. It was as lovely as before, but this time Tane could see the insincerity behind it.
I had just reached a rather exciting chapter.
Polite, but a dismissal all the same. They were ushered back around the house and off the grounds without delay. Tane waited until they reached Indri's coach, away from the guardsmen at the gate, and then he said, "She was hiding something. She didn't want you poking around the house, and she kept glancing at the cellar door."
"The cellar?"
Indri frowned.
"I didn't catch that, but she certainly was quick to get rid of us when I suggested looking around the grounds."
"Which means it's just what we should do, yes?"
Khadka said.
"Why leave?"
"Because I need a warrant to search her property without her permission," said Indri. "And Durin isn't going to be happy when I ask for one. Not for a senator's estate."
She sighed.
"I hate this case. I really do."
"We both know that's going to take too long," Tane said. "By the time you have your warrant, she'll have hidden whatever it is she needs to hide."
"Spellfire Ree, someone else could be dead by then."
"What else can I do, Tane?"
Indri demanded.
"I'm bound by the law. I'll try to make Durin see reason. He'll at least understand that more murders look bad for him. Until then, I don't want you two doing anything stupid."
Tane held up his hands in surrender. "Couldn't if we wanted to. Our invitation was temporary. There's no way we're getting back in through the estate's wards." Indri fixed him with a long look and then nodded.
"True, I suppose. Do you two need a ride?"
Tane shook his head. "No, you should get straight back to the yard and get started on that warrant. We'll take the discs." Indri just nodded and climbed up to her seat.
"I'll let you know when I have something."
She motioned to the driver, and then they were away. Tane turned to Khadka as soon as Indri was out of earshot. "She'll never get it in time. Come on."
"I know this look."
A grin spread across Khadka's face.
"You have plan. What is it?"
"To get back in through the estate's wards. But we're going to need help." Chapter 12
"My friends, what a wonderful treat to see you again."
Bastion Duglin fluttered up to meet them on iridescent butterfly wings. He was dressed, as ever, in an impeccably tailored green suit and matching masquerade mask. Behind him, a massive warehouse workshop was filled with cluttered tables, and a small army was hard at work assembling artifacts out of brass and copper and gold and precious gems. Here and there, pincered brass arms attached to the tables performed simple tasks like sorting charms and artifacts into different crates. Automation in its most basic, limited form. Even when there was nothing in front of them, they continued their grab-and-move motion in an endless pantomime. "Bastion," Tane said with a smile. The round-bellied little sprite might have been a criminal, but his enthusiasm was hard to resist. "You've grown your operation, I see." Bastion's previous shop had been destroyed by men working for Chancellor Nieris. The new location was easily 3 times the size. Bastion sighed mournfully and placed a hand over his heart.
"It was all I could do in memory of the friends lost in that barbaric attack. You cannot let such evils press us down, Mr. Carver. We must hold our heads high and show them the strength of the Oddish spirit."
He flew by Tane to perch on Khadka's shoulder.
"My dearest Khadka, you understand what I mean, don't you? Your irrepressible spirit is a great part of what I admire so about you."
Kadka laughed, tilting her head to look at him.
Still say too many words for what you mean, little man. But I understand.
Bastion beamed at her.
I knew you would.
His smile quickly fell into a frown.
But there seem to be more evils than usual haunting our streets of late. A terrible thing, this Emperor's Mask business. I suppose that's what brings you here.
Tane raised an eyebrow. What have you heard?
It is all over, Phallus, that this mask has challenged the Magebreakers,
Bastion said.
A grave mistake, and one I have no doubt that he will soon regret. But is it true?
All over Phallus. Wonderful. Well, no point lying, I suppose. More or less, and don't call us Magebreakers. Bastion pouted his lower lip.
It seems a shame to waste such a wonderfully vivid title, but if you insist. In any event, I am delighted to know you are on the case. The mask must be stopped. Anyone who fancies the rise of another mage emperor is a traitor to everything Audland represents. Magic for the magical. Ah! Magic is for everyone!
He punched a little hand into his palm as punctuation, his round cheeks flushed with passion.
My friends, your dedication to our nation's interests never ceases to amaze me. I know that you will get the better of this madman in short order. But let us speak of happier things. I understand you have brought a very interesting guest to see me.
Endo Stook, said Tane. You've heard of him too, I take it.
A young prodigy,
Bastion exclaimed, by way of confirmation.
So little of his artifice work reaches the public, but I make a point of knowing the most talented names in the field. What I've heard of his progress with automation is astounding.
So, can we bring him in? Tane asked.
Ah, said Bastion. That little issue. I am sorry my friends had to hold him outside, but you know, the young son of a senate house doesn't come to my little shop every day. Normally there are channels for that, and of course my usual policy of acquiring a divination focus is out of the question. Are you quite certain he can be trusted to keep a secret?
I believe so, said Tane. We were hired to investigate Ulnod Stook's murder. Endo just wants justice for his brother. He won't do anything to jeopardize the investigation, and right now we're at a dead end without his help. And yours.
Well, that won't do at all. Let us not delay another instant. If you trust him, I trust him.
Bastion clapped his hands together and motioned to the men waiting at the door.
Bring him in.
Bastion's men escorted Endo in through the door. Wheeling in his chair, Endo surveyed the huge workshop with wide eyes.
I didn't think it would be so big,
he said as he drew up alongside Tane and Katka. Bastion hopped down from Kadka's shoulder in a flutter of wings to alight on the arm of Endo's chair.
Endo Stook, my deepest condolences for your loss. A true tragedy.
He extended a tiny hand, and Endo hesitantly took it between his thumb and finger. Bastion shook vigorously.
Bastion Duglin, at your service, and let me say that even in these dark times, it is an honor to meet you. I have followed your artifice work where I could. Particularly your work in automation. I've dabbled myself.
He gestured towards the brass arms working away behind him.
But only for the most repetitive tasks. I understand you have a great mind for it.
Endo flushed and ducked his head.
Thank you, but I'm not sure about that.
Nonsense!
Bastion gestured at the chair beneath his feet.
This is your work, no? Such elegance!
He took flight once more, surveying the spells etched into brass and copper.
The efficiency is astounding.
Hovering by the wheels, he jabbed a finger excitedly at a section of glyphs and looked back at Tane.
Have you seen this?
Tane stepped closer and knelt to look. The glyphs etched around the circumference of the wheels detailed spells of motion and guidance. That's interesting. The way the steering and the momentum spells are integrated?
I could never have arranged it so elegantly,
Bastion said.
The way one plays into the other, eliminating redundancies. Expensive to power, even so, I imagine. My clientele prefers a better cost to effect. But to make such a thing function all day without an Ankrist engine? Bravo, Mr. Stook.
Well, I had a lot of free time to work on it,
Endo said, leaning over the side of his chair to look at them. The blush was fading from his cheeks, and there was a spark of excitement in his eye.
If you find that interesting, you might like the levitation spells underneath. They're not perfect yet, but
maybe you three talk about this later,
Kadka said from behind, and Tane glanced back to see her watching them with a sharp-toothed grin.
Could go all night, I think, but is not why we are here.
Right. Tane stood and brushed off his knees. Bastion, we need something illegal, fast. Bastion landed on the arm of Endo's chair once more.
Well, you have my attention. Perhaps it's best if we speak in my office.
Bastion took flight and beckoned for them to follow, then led them through the warehouse to a room in the back corner. Inside, several comfortable chairs sat before a pedestal with a sprite-sized desk atop it. A countertop ran around the edge of the room with a number of small workstations set upon its surface, most bearing artifacts in various stages of construction. Bastion landed atop the pedestal and rested his round body in the tiny chair behind his desk.
"Please sit," he said. "Tell me more."
"We have to bypass some powerful wards," Tane explained, lowering himself into a chair. Beside him, Katka did the same, and Endo rolled his chair between theirs. Probably best if I don't say where, but Endo has a standing invite. The problem is, he can't get where we need to get without being noticed, so I need a mimic vial.
Ah,
said Bastion.
So that is why I've been given the pleasure of meeting young Mr. Stork.
He smiled at Endo.
I am glad to have had the opportunity, but a hair or fingernail would have sufficed. You hardly needed to trouble yourself coming here.
I wanted to, said Endo. Didn't feel comfortable after what happened to my brother. I couldn't give a focus to a stranger without seeing with my own eyes what happened to it.
He rubbed the back of his neck awkwardly.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to offend.
No offense taken whatsoever, Bastion exclaimed. I do hate the label, but I am what some might call a criminal after all. No, you were wise to consider the dangers. Perhaps you would like to put your focus into the vial yourself. I won't lay a hand on it, and once our mutual friends have taken it from here, I expect I shall never see it again. Does that ease your mind?
Endo was silent a moment, and then nodded.
I suppose it does.
Well then, to business, said Bastion. I have the vials, of course, but there is a complication. They are only useful for confusing detection spells, not breaking wards.
He turned to Tane.
If you want to replace your astral signature with his... You of all people must know it won't work, Mr. Carver. The vial will only overlay a second signature on top of yours. A masking spell won't help. It might stop a spell from identifying you specifically, but not from sensing an astral link at all. And any worthwhile ward will have been set to lock out such conflicts. It's been tried 100 different ways.
That won't be a problem, said Tane, and tipped his head toward Katka. She grinned.
Don't need to mask anything. We have me.
A smile of understanding spread across Bastion's face.
Of course! Oh, well done, my friends! Brilliant! It couldn't work for anyone else, but with your natural invisibility to the Astra, the ward will detect a sentient creature with Mr. Stook's signature and nothing else. Wait here.
In a flurry of wings, he flew out of the room, and Tane heard him rummaging around outside. A moment later, he reappeared, holding a brooch-sized cylindrical artifact in both hands.
I'll have to make some modifications, of course.
He moved to an empty work table at the edge of the room and set down the vial. Tane stood to observe. Katka and Endo followed. The mimic vial was a small glass tube in a copper sleeve, with glyphs etched around the outside. Whatever divination focus was put in the vial would give off the semblance of its owner's astral signature to detection spells and the like. They were quite illegal. Usually used, as Bastion had mentioned, to confuse divinations or raise false alerts from detection spells. No one had ever managed to use one to get through a ward, though. But there's a first time for everything. Bastion took a small scrap of copper in hand, uttered a spell in the lingua, and began pulling and shaping the metal in his hands into a thin, sharp point, like a sewing needle.
This is the easiest way to bind it to you, he said to Katka.
Another spell uttered, and Bastion fused the needle to the copper case of the vial. Then, with an incredibly tiny etching tool, he began scribing glyphs too small for Tane to read along the narrow length.
Stick the needle into your flesh, and the copper will direct the decoy signature inward. The shoulder, I should think, where it won't do much damage. The spells will hold it in place until you remove it yourself. It won't be pleasant, but I suspect you can handle that if anyone can.
Finally, he hefted the vial in his hands and fluttered down to the arm of Endo's chair.
There we are. If you would be so kind as to provide the focus, Mr. Stook.
Endo took the vial and, after a short hesitation, plucked a hair from his head with a wince.
I've never done something like this before, he said, looking up at Tane. Illegal, I mean. Are you sure?
Is this going to help find the person who killed Elnaut?
I wouldn't ask you to do it if I thought otherwise, Tane said. Noanna Uthar is hiding something, and we need to know what it is.
Then,
Endo took a deep breath and slipped the hair into the vial, then sealed it again and offered it to Khadka.
Here, take it.
She did, offering him a toothy smile in return that was as gentle as Tane had ever seen her manage.
No one will know you helped us. It's the right thing to find Mask before he kills again.
I know,
said Endo.
Please, just stop him.
Soon, Khadka said.
But for an instant, Tane thought he saw a flicker of doubt in her eyes. No more than he'd been feeling himself, but it was worse somehow, coming from her. We'll get him, Endo, he said. I hope. Bastion's relentless enthusiasm, at least, was undimmed.
You put your trust in the right place, Mr. Stook. These two will not disappoint you.
He raised a finger.
There is one more thing, however. The vial will not work forever. Once the needle is inserted, whatever astral energy is left in that hair will be drained quickly to cast Mr. Stook's signature. But you needn't worry so long as you get inside within a few minutes. Wards only function on entry. There may still be detection spells, but we both know those are of no consequence to our dear Khadka.
He gazed at her wistfully behind his extravagant mask.
Oh, if only I could convince you to turn those gifts to my service. We would make such a beautiful team.
Keep dreaming, little man,
Khadka said with a fond grin.
One day, maybe I get desperate, but not now.
She glanced down at the mimic vial in her hand, and then up at Tane.
Come, Carver. We have crime to do.
Chapter 13
Is broken here,
said Khadka, peering up at the 10-foot wall around the Uthar estate.
I can climb.
After leaving Bastion's, she and Carver had waited for the cover of dark to sneak along the banks of the Odd, careful to stay out of sight. It wouldn't look good if the Mageblade patrols found a half-orc creeping around the roost at night. Here, where the estate walls butted up against the river, a number of bricks were loose or broken, enough to work as handholds. As Carver was so fond of noting, people who relied on wards and magic tended to let the old-fashioned methods fall by the wayside. All right, whispered Carver, peering nervously over his shoulder. Wait until you hear me shouting before you go. I'll make sure the guards are distracted.
Go then!
Khadka shooed Carver away. The plan was the plan. There was no purpose going over it for the 10th time. He scurried away down the river, keeping low so that the walls of the estates along the bank hid him from sight. Khadka leaned back against the bricks to wait. She hated waiting. She'd learned to do it well enough in her youth, hunting prey in the Svernan tundra, but never patiently, and the time she'd spent guarding doors at the university hadn't made her like it any better. Finally, after a quarter hour, she heard shouting from the far side of the estate. Her orcish ears had no trouble recognizing Carver's voice.
I demand to see Senator Uthar. I have questions she hasn't answered, and I won't be denied.
As good a signal as any. Khadka took the mimic vial from her trouser pocket, careful not to prick her hand on the needle, and then, without hesitation, jabbed it into her shoulder. It stung, but not unbearably. A sudden warmth passed through her body, and she grinned wide. Magic never got old. Carver shouted again, far across the grounds.
The Magebreakers won't rest until our questions are answered.
That must have been hard for him. He hated that name. She could picture vividly the way he'd have cringed as he said it. No time to enjoy the thought. She had to get in before the vial's magic ran out. Khadka turned and started climbing. Carver was still yelling as she peeked her head over the wall. She'd picked an isolated spot in one corner of the grounds, and there were no lights here. Her keen night vision picked out two guards beside a small gate to the riverbank halfway across the garden, and no one else. The rest must have already gone towards the noise. No mage blades inside the walls either. According to Carver, House Uthar lacked any notable magicless members to protect from the mask. The way was clear. Now all she could do was hope Bastion's device worked and that she hadn't already run out of time. She took a breath and heaved herself over, preparing to smash her face against an invisible wall. It wouldn't be the first time. Instead, she felt the tingle on her skin that she always felt passing through a ward. The white fur on the backs of her hands rose slightly, and then she was through. she dropped down on the other side of the wall, landing in a quiet crouch. She was inside the Uthar estate. For a moment, she didn't move, just hunkered at the foot of the wall and surveyed her surroundings. She was alone. There were no guards nearby. The garden was wide, but not without cover. Tall hedges divided it into sections. So long as she kept quiet, making it to the cellar would be easy enough, and not even that quiet, with Carver bellowing at the gates. Ignoring the slight but persistent pain of the needle in her shoulder, she crept across the grounds, staying in the shadow of hedges where she could, and placing her feet gently with each step. The pliant grass muffled most of the sound, but if she went too quickly, it would crunch underfoot. Moving silently was something else she'd learned hunting in Zverna when she was young. The white elk of the Orcish homeland were more alert than most anyone in Audland. As far as she could tell, no one had seen her by the time she reached the manor. The cellar was set into the ground against the back wall, a short distance to the left of a mage-lit patio overlooking the garden. The silver-blue glow reached far enough that she'd have to be careful getting closer. She could move without a sound, and for whatever reason she was invisible to most magic, but she couldn't stop herself from casting a shadow. There was a fairly clear sight line down the center of the garden, a cobbled path from the patio at the back of the house to the small gate opening onto the river. If either of the gate guards saw movement against the light, it would be a problem. The cellar was far enough to the side that it might be out of sight, and she hoped the gazebo in the middle of the garden would provide some cover, open-sided as it was, but she couldn't be certain. Kadka went ahead anyway. Who needed certainty, really? She was all too aware of her shadow against the grass as she closed the distance, but it was faint, blending into a hundred other darknesses. Drawing alongside the cellar doors, she stopped, glanced down the central path. The gate was hidden behind a hedge at this angle, but just barely. She could see the arm of one of the guards peeking around the edge. The doors were standard cellar fare, a pair of thick wooden slabs in a stone setting, large enough for an ogryn to pass through easily. Less common was the iron chain that joined the handles together, fastened with a heavy lock. Hardly enough to raise eyebrows. The Uthars had a right to security on their own property. But intuition told Kadka that they were hiding something beyond preserves or old furniture. She gripped the chain where it looped through the handles and pulled. It jangled slightly and held fast. Kadka looked over her shoulder to see if the sound had been noted. The bit of the guard's arm she could see didn't move. Carver was still arguing with the guards at the front gate. She could hear him, distantly, although the shouting had hit something of a lull. A lull that wouldn't last if she knew him. She gripped the chain again and waited. It didn't take long. "You can't send me away! I'll raise a formal complaint! I have a right to—" Masked by his ranting, Kadka braced her feet against the stone setting, wrapped the chain tight in both fists, and yanked violently. The metal didn't break, but wood buckled and bent, which was just what she'd been hoping for. Phallus was a city of magic. The prevalence of wards meant that even when someone bothered with a lock, they rarely thought about the strength of the door itself. Another pull, and one of the handles broke free in a burst of splinters. Again she looked to the far gate. Still no movement. With one quick motion, she cast both doors open. They always creaked louder the slower you tried to open them, she'd found. Behind them, a stone stairway descended beneath the manor. She'd expected darkness, but there was a light at the bottom of the stairs, faint and silver. Kadka stepped through the doors. Something resisted. There was nothing there under her foot, but she couldn't lower it any further. A ward. Either the magic of the vial had run out, or Endo's invitation wasn't enough to enter. Probably both. There was definitely something down there, though, which meant she had to get in. How would Carver do it? He knew about tricking wards. Always a flaw, he liked to say. Maybe Endo couldn't get in, but someone had to be allowed. And Kadka thought she knew who. She glanced at her shoulder, where the small vial jabbed into her flesh, and an idea started to form. The handle she'd yanked from the door lay on the ground at her feet, a heavy iron thing large enough for ogryn hands. She picked it up. It had a solid heft to it. Aiming for a spot on the side wall near the back, she hurled the handle in a high arc over the hedges. It hit the wall with a loud clang and clattered to the ground. "What was that?" one of the guards at the riverside gate, far away but loud enough for orc ears.
"Better have a look," his partner answered.
Across the grounds, the arm poking out beyond the hedge disappeared. Kadka made for the path down the center of the garden. When she rounded the hedge that had blocked her sight before, both guards were gone, off to investigate the noise. That was lucky. She'd worried one might stay at the gate. Probably one should have stayed, but she couldn't blame them. She'd spent all night guarding a door before, and after a few hours, any distraction was welcome. The gazebo was her target. She made for it in long, loping strides, covering ground as quickly as she could without giving away her presence. Stepping onto the marble base of the structure, she ducked low to take cover behind the furniture, and crossed to the huge chair Noana Uthar had been sitting in when they'd visited earlier. She didn't have much hope of finding what she needed, but sometimes luck provided. This time, it did. She had to climb halfway into the massive seat just to get a look, but against the back cushion, her keen night eyes found a long strand of flaxen hair. Kadka plucked it up between two fingers. She could hear the footsteps of the guards returning to their posts, and she was in clear sight of the gate now. Had to move quickly. She stole back up the path and ducked out of sight behind the hedge. No shouts from behind. Good. They hadn't seen her. Her back against the hedge, Kadka grabbed the vial jutting from her shoulder and pulled it free. It hurt as much coming out as it had going in. Not unbearable, but annoying. She unscrewed the cap and fished out a single dark strand of Endo's hair. She didn't need it anymore. It had probably lost power by now anyway. In its place, she inserted the long blonde hair she'd taken from Noana Uthar's chair. Then, bracing herself, she jabbed the needle back into her arm. Magic never got old, but that particular part of it was becoming tiresome. She preferred the kind without needles. The same strange warmth as before passed through her, which meant it was working, she hoped. She crossed to the cellar and stepped over the threshold once more. This time, her foot touched the steps without interference.
One of those mage breakers. They were here earlier. Don't know what he was so riled about.
A man's voice from around the corner of the house, and footsteps moving in her direction.
Persistent, I'll give him that,
a woman's voice replied.
Well, he's in the mage blade's hands now.
So, the mage blades had interceded to stop Carver's distraction. And as soon as the returning patrol rounded the corner, they'd see her. Kadka moved quickly down the steps, and the tingle of a ward ran over her skin as she passed through. She drew the doors closed behind her. How she was going to get back out now, she had no idea, but at least she'd made it in unseen. She descended toward the light at the bottom of the stairs, slipping one hand behind her back to grasp the hilt of the knife hidden there. If this was the mask's lair, she was going to be ready. As ready as she could be, against an opponent who had barely seemed to notice her the last time they'd fought. But it wasn't the lair of a murderer she found at the bottom of the stairs. She was in a child's bedroom. Except the child must have been a giant. Or an ogryn. A massive bed sat on one side of the room, and on a table beside it was the source of the dim mage light, a porcelain night lamp shaped like a crescent moon. The bed was empty. The sheets left in messy disarray. Whoever slept there, they weren't anywhere in sight. To her right, a closed door led to another room. A privy of some kind, Kadka hoped, for the sake of whoever lived down here. Glyphs were carved in places high on the ceiling, relating to wards, she assumed. She recognized the upper half-circle within a circle glyph Carver had explained to her the other day, the one that meant all things sentient. Toys were scattered everywhere, just like in Durnor Deepwell's room, but the little dwarf boy would barely have been able to lift these. A ship, and a knight, and a dragon, and several others, all carved from wood, all near the size of Kadka's torso. Most were broken and battered and bent, and several had been torn clean in two. Whoever had done that, they were incredibly strong. Kadka remembered Carver saying that the Uthars had no children, and Noana had only talked about a grown nephew. So whose bedroom was this? Beside the bed was a chest of drawers. That seemed as good a place as any to start looking. Kadka picked her way across the room through the ruined playthings and pulled open the top drawer. Simple clothing, nothing of interest. She shifted the top layer aside, and metal glinted in the dim light. The edge of something, wrapped in black cloth, Katka pulled the object free, unwrapped it. The cloth covering it wasn't just cloth. It was a long black robe. And inside was a brass mask with narrow eye slits, emblazoned with the Mage Emperor's sigil.
Dishka!
Katka swore under her breath. Footfalls from across the room, heavy ones. Katka whirled. The door at the side of the room swung open. It was the furthest thing from a child she could imagine. At a glance, the figure in the door was muscular enough to win a wrestling match with a manticore, and ugly enough to lose a beauty contest. He stood close to 10 feet tall, broad-shouldered and barrel-chested, with a heavy gut and arms as thick around as Ancrist cannons. His face was hideous and misshapen, one eye larger and higher than the other under a thick, single eyebrow that stretched across his bulging forehead. His nose was turned up like a pig's snout, and a wide mouth drooped at one side above at least 4 chins of folded fat. An ogre. Katka had never seen one, but she'd heard the stories. 1 in 3 Ogryn children were born so monstrous and savage that they had to be kept in a remote sanctuary somewhere on the island. People said that they were as ugly as their parents were beautiful, and now she knew that was true, although statuesque Ogryn beauty had never been much to Katka's taste anyway. More importantly, ogres were supposed to be far stronger than even their pure-born kindred, which was saying something. This one certainly looked it. And he was between her and the way out. She transferred the brass mask to her left hand and drew her knife, although she had a feeling it wouldn't bother this creature much more than the needle in her arm bothered her. For a moment, he just looked at her, blinking those dull, lopsided eyes. And then he growled, his lip pulling back to reveal an incomplete set of crooked teeth. The ogre lowered his head and charged. Chapter 14 Broken toys flew aside as the ogre trampled towards her, and not slowly, despite his size. Katka leapt to the side, but a broken toy ship caught her leg before she could fully clear the ogre's path. A massive arm clipped her in the side, threw her and the ship hard against the wall. The mimic vial struck first, jarring the needle, and a sharp pain tore through her shoulder. The ogre was already turning for her again, and the strength of even that glancing blow told her he was an opponent she couldn't fight. Another one. She clutched the brass mask tight in her hand. Her priority had to be getting out alive so she could show it to Carver and Indri, and she had a clear path to the stairs now. She shoved the toy ship aside and ran. She wasn't fast enough. The ogre outpaced her on huge legs, wrapped meaty hands around her waist from behind. He lifted her from her feet like she weighed nothing at all. Katka twisted to face the ogre. He roared full in her face, throwing spittle and hot breath against her cheeks. Those massive arms raised her high overhead as if he meant to dash her against the floor. She slashed backhanded at his wrist, drew blood. The ogre squealed in shocked dismay, released her with that hand and brought the wound to his mouth to suck at it. The other hand around her waist loosened, and she squirmed free, dropping several feet to the floor. The stairs were only an arm's length away, and Katka scrabbled towards them, started climbing. Another roar, and thumping footsteps. He was following. She was nearly at the doors when a massive weight struck her from behind, knocked the breath from her. An iron grip wrapped tight around her body. The force carried her up the last few steps, slammed her against the doors with concussive force. They flew open. Katka could see stars above, swimming in her blurred vision. The mask flew from her hand to land in the grass. Her feet didn't join it there. She was trapped, held aloft by a giant arm. The ogre had tackled them both through the doors, but his attention wasn't on her now. Instead, he swiveled his head from side to side and made a strangled noise of confusion deep in his throat. He wasn't used to the world outside his cellar. Something had to have been keeping him in. The wards. He probably couldn't leave unless he was with one of his keepers. Jailers? Katka wasn't sure. But whatever they were, Noanna Uthar was one of them. Katka looked to the vial jabbed into her shoulder as understanding dawned. A red stain was growing on her shirt where the needle had torn flesh, but just then the pain didn't matter. What mattered was that she had let this thing free.
What in the Astra?
A woman's voice, one of the guards Khadka had heard earlier, a dwarven woman. She approached with her human partner, and there were more closing in on all sides, weapons drawn.
Don't move!
The ogre moved. He looked left, then right, saw guards surrounding him. With one hand, he lifted Khadka like she was a toy. And then he threw her. She flew through the air, crashed against the dwarven woman and her partner, and all three of them fell to the ground in a heap. Khadka heard the ogre moving again, grabbed the woman under her, and rolled to the side just as a huge foot stomped down the grass where they'd been. Craning her neck, Khadka watched the ogre go. He crashed around the corner of the house and out of sight, toward the front gate, toward the street. There were people out there. Guards, mage blades, maybe others. Carver. And it was her fault this thing was loose. Khadka pushed herself up, snatched the mask from where it had fallen, and staggered after the ogre, her head still spinning from the impact.
Stop! An ogren guard commanded, moving to pursue. Who are you?
Khadka just kept going, faster with every step as her head cleared.
Not first problem now,
she said, and pointed in the direction the ogre had gone.
He is.
As if to prove her point, a startled cry came from the other side of the manor, and then a loud, angry roar. The guards were following her now, either to stop her or pursue the ogre. It didn't matter which, really. Khadka led them toward the sound. Tane struggled against the mage blade's grip, putting on a show. Anything to keep attention on him instead of what Khadka was doing. The dwarven man holding his arm just squeezed tighter.
You need to calm down, sir. Calm down? I'm being manhandled by—
A loud crash interrupted him, and then shouting from deep in the estate. Tane snapped his head toward the sound.
Khadka, what did you do?
The second mage blade, a blue-scaled kobold, motioned to his partner.
Could be the mask. We need to get in there now.
The dwarf nodded and released Tane's arm.
Sir, we need you to get to a safe distance.
He and his partner approached the gates. Tane followed two steps behind. Something was moving around the side of the house. A massive shadow emerged into the glow of the mage lights along the manor's front steps. Something as tall as an ogren, but broader at the shoulder, with a hunched head, a huge gut, and massive arms. Several guards approached the shape, and a pair of mage blades already on the grounds left their posts at the door to get closer. Several cries, an angry roar, a sweep of a giant arm, and guards went flying. The thing never stopped moving. It seemed to be headed for the gates, and closing fast. And then Tane understood what Noanna Uthar had been hiding. An ogre. They were meant to be sent to the sanctuary at the south end of the island at birth, where they could live safely without putting anyone in danger. Apparently, the Uthars had taken exception to that policy. The ogre showed no sign of slowing as it neared the gate, just lowered its head and dropped a shoulder.
It's going to go right through.
Get out of the way!
Tane shouted, and leapt to one side. The gate guards heeded his warning, scrambling to either side. The mage blades didn't. They began to chant in the lingua, a coordinated duet of arcane words, and both raised their hands at the same moment. A sheet of silver-blue shielding rose across the gap in the wall where the gate sat. The ogre collided with the gate, and it was iron that buckled, not flesh. Metal squealed and broke, and the doors crashed open. The mage blade's shield fared better. With a great silver flash, it arrested the ogre's momentum. But the two mage blades flinched back, as if struck by a physical blow. They set their feet as the ogre took three steps back and hurled himself at the shield again. It didn't hold. Another silver flash, and the sheet of energy evaporated. The ogre swept the mage blades aside with one arm as it crashed through, hurling both men to the cobblestone several yards away. And then it was free, loping away down the street. Free. And strong enough to break a shield cast by two trained combat mages.
Spellfire, that thing could tear the city to pieces. We're going to need more than a few mage blades.
Tane dug in his left pocket and came out with the sending locket Indri had given him. He squeezed it tight in his hand. An instant later, a familiar pressure grew in his ears, and he heard Indri's voice.
Tane, what's wrong? Did you find something?
You could say that. There's an ogre loose in the griffin's roost.
What? How is that even possible?
Carver, is no time to stand around. Come!
Katka yelled as she came sprinting through the broken gates. She jabbed a finger after the ogre. Another Mageblade patrol was moving to stop it now. Tane didn't like their chances.
Katka, there's nothing we can...
She tossed him something that glinted in the silver-blue mage light of the street lamps. He caught it. A brass mask bearing the Mage Emperor's sigil.
Found this in cellar with him,
she said. That Tane couldn't let pass. Let's go. Katka started after the ogre once more, and Tane chased behind, tucking the mask into his belt.
Tane?
Indri's voice again.
What in the Astra is happening?
I told you, Ree, an ogre. You have to get people here to contain this thing fast, and a lot of them. There aren't enough mage blades. Tane fumbled in his pockets as he ran, badly outpaced by Katka. He'd bought several charms from Bastion, but he wasn't sure which of them would be of use now. Certainly not the shield, if two mage blades couldn't hold one against the ogre's strength. Indri didn't waste any more time.
Where?
We're on Riverview, beside the Aud, coming up on the intersection with Audlian's Way.
I can have a squad there in a few minutes. Just tell me if it moves, and stay out of its way.
Will do, Tane lied. Ahead, two mage blades were trying to bind the ogre with magic. Silver-blue cords wrapped around its wrists. It heaved against them once, and again, and then the astral bindings broke. With a backward sweep of its hand, the ogre threw a brass-armored elf against the wall of the adjacent estate. The other mage blade, a human woman, fired her anchorist pistol, chanting in the language she did. The ball struck true, and the ogre howled in pain, but didn't stop. It was on her before she could finish her spell, grabbing the hand holding the pistol. The ogre lifted her by one arm and squeezed. The woman screamed as pistol and bone broke. Katka was behind the ogre now, and she leapt onto its back, wrapping both arms around its neck. Surprised, it dropped the mage blade, who fell clasping her ruined hand. Keeping her grip with one arm, Katka raised her knife and plunged it into the ogre's shoulder. It let out a bellow and shook its massive body like a dog just out of the water, whipping Katka back and forth like a rag doll. Her grip failed, and she flew free, landed hard on the ground. The ogre tromped after her. Closing the distance at last, Tane stepped in front of Katka and raised his fist.
Close your eyes,
he shouted, and then he closed his and crushed the charm clasped in his palm. A flash of light burned pink through his eyelids. The ogre roared in shock. Tane opened his eyes to see it stumbling back, turning away, and then it ran, covering distance quickly on massive muscular legs. Katka climbed to her feet, didn't even take a moment to steady herself before giving chase again. As she moved by, Tane saw a look of fierce determination in her eyes, very different from the grin she usually wore when she fought. Tane pulled another charm from his left pocket, and the charm globe from the right, a palm-sized brass sphere that could activate a charm on a short delay. Fumbling with the globe's clasp, he ran after Katka once more. The street was blocked just ahead. A bulky, anchorist-powered carriage lumbered to a stop on huge brass wheels as the ogre approached. Through the front window, Tane could see an elegantly dressed man and woman staring wide-eyed at the giant bearing down on them. It's going to kill them. Even if it didn't mean to, it had to move the carriage to get by, and it wasn't going to do that gently. Tane pushed his charm into place, snapped the charm globe closed, wound the key just a fraction of a turn. With all his strength, he hurled it overhand and hoped his aim and his timing were good. The globe flew over the ogre's head, bounced once on the blocky snout of the anchorist carriage, and then burst open. A wave of silver-blue energy rippled outward in an expanding circle. The man and woman in the carriage ducked down in their seats as the repulsion charm cracked their window, rocked their vehicle backwards a half-turn of those big wheels. The ogre staggered back several steps, shielding itself with both arms, which gave Katka time to catch up. She ducked around the ogre, put herself between it and the carriage. Tane skidded to a halt just behind.
What now?
He called to her, praying that she had some kind of plan. Katka just raised her knife.
"Now we try not to die," she said.